they were attacking Finland. Finland was fighting for itself, and Finland did very well. But I'm really concerned about this juxtaposition of fear and this generalization from the Gulf War to what might happen now. Mm-hmm. And if they get, if you're going to get down the blaze of war, Hussein is, why not make sure that these other people know they're going to get killed right now if they don't take out his followers' orders?
Well, I guess I was being a little more compassionate than you are. And I was giving them a chance that they would do what they did in the Gulf War, as you say, totally surrender and not be willing to die. Listen, what would happen in your scenario if the guy next door, next to you, wants to not sacrifice his life for Saddam Hussein as well?
And this time they're going to be prepared for that sort of thing.
Right? No, I don't believe that. No, I don't believe that. Let me just tell you the difference. Why I think it will be a cakewalk, a war against Iraq. And there are four reasons. And you gave the first one very nicely. And that was that it was a cakewalk the first time. We had very few, thank God, casualties. By and large, the Iraqi armed forces surrendered. They didn't want to fight for this guy. And by and large, you know, we won the war in 100 hours on the ground. Wasn't much. Point number two. Since that cakewalk in 1990, the Iraqi army has gotten so much weaker. Right now, the Iraqi, and that's the armed forces, the Iraqi army is one-third the size than it was in the beginning of the Gulf War. It has no upgrades in its equipment. It has no operational practice over the 11 years since the Gulf War. Its air force, which was never much, is less than half what it was in the Gulf War. So it's much weaker than it was in the Gulf War. Point number three, the United States is so much stronger than it was during the Gulf War. During the Gulf War, we had an awesome air capability that over the 28 days really did eliminate most of the targets and the resistance in Iraq. During that time, 80% of the bombs we dropped were non-smart bombs, dumb bombs. In Afghanistan, in the recent engagement, over 80% are smart bombs. What does a smart bomb do? It gives enormous precision. And when you get precision, it is devastating to the adversary. We have daisy cutters now. We have Predator missiles. We have Global Hawk. We have all kinds of equipment and information that we never had in the Gulf War. The United States is a far stronger military power today than it was. That's number three point. Number four point is very simple. This time you're playing for keeps. This time you announce ahead of time your objective is to change the regime. Not to destroy the country, not to hurt the people. People have been the biggest sufferers from Saddam Hussein. Your objective is to remove him. And once people get the idea the United States is playing for keeps, you know what? That goes a long way so that people say, oh my God, you know, it's different.
Okay, there's a question in the back. Your hand was there, okay.
I have a comment and a question.
Okay, speak up, please.
Thank you. The first comment I have is directly related to what you said in your talk. I'm going to paraphrase. And you said, the reason why we're going into Iraq is to remove the regime. One of the main reasons for that is because of the Iraqi, in quote, propaganda, Iranian propaganda about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. You're saying that if you remove Saddam Hussein and his regime, then the Arabs and the Arab countries will view Israel as a neutral country. Like, this is, I'm paraphrasing again. Don't you think that the core and the essence of the problem, the Arab-Israeli problem, is due to the fact that there has been 53 years of oppression by Israel on the Palestinian people and not the media propaganda and everything else from, you know, countries like Iraq and Iran? That's my comment. My question is,
let me answer that, okay?
Well, it's a comment. It's not really a question.
Okay. I thought it was, don't you think that, but okay.
It's a comment. Anyways, it's food for thought. My question, which you probably can answer, is since you've been working with the government people for so long, I'm sure you're aware, during the Gulf War in 1991, specifically March of 1991, there was an uprising within Iraq to remove Saddam Hussein from power. And of course, who was it being supported by? The Bush administration at the time. And of course, they, you know, lent their word about supporting the uprising in order to remove Saddam Hussein from power. But of course, we all know what happened in 1991, of March of 1991. It never really materialized. The reason, and this is caught on tape, is that President Bush at the time, you know, decided that after all of this uprising stirring, he decided that, well, you know what, we don't know who's going to come into place instead of Saddam Hussein, and we can't, you know, be 100% sure that he's going to be a friend of the United States. Therefore, he chose to keep him in power. So my question is, what's the difference now? I mean, didn't you already try this and at the same time put it down? What's the difference now?
Difference now is several.
Ken, before you get going, if you could comment on his comment, because you did not mention the Arab-Israeli problem.
Sure, I will.
I think
it was very well spoken, and I think your views were very nicely expressed, let me tell you that. I think that factually it is not the case that President Bush Sr. wanted to keep Saddam Hussein in power at that time. I think that it is clear at the time that he thought that there was going to be an internal coup against Saddam Hussein, and therefore it was not a conscious decision, let's keep him. It was, they will get rid of this guy internally by the military right there. It turned out not to be the case, and I think we missed an opportunity to get rid of him 11 years ago. And so I think in that respect, you are quite right in that. Your first comment, was, I think the Israeli-Arab issue is because of 52 years of oppression of the Palestinians by the Israelis. And no, I do not.
Thank you. Mr. Edelman, I know that you have a lot of history in the administrations. My question really is, first of all...
Do I look that old?
Your history in the Reagan administration and yeah. Your relationship with Secretary of State Rumsfeld.
Right.
And my question really, I have two questions. The first one is, what is it that makes us, I'm really tagging off with the last question, what is it that makes us certain that the new regime will be any more beneficial to the people of Iraq? When and why is it that, in the first place, we supported Saddam Hussein and actually put him in power as, when at that time, our main goal was stability in the region, not necessarily a country which we thought would be friendly to U.S. interests in the long run? The second part of that question is, I guess, a comment, really. You mentioned that the people of Afghanistan were very supportive of our efforts in the bombing campaign, and I know that the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan has made a lot of statements recently. Their statement is really clear that they don't feel that the Northern Alliance being in power is any better for them than the Taliban. The people in Afghanistan are still afraid to remove their burqas because they don't know how hardline the regime is going to be. And the people in Afghanistan are still being executed the same way. The Taliban has said, well, the Taliban was doing it in the soccer stadiums. The new regime is saying, well, we won't do it in the soccer stadiums. We'll have it in some other place. But they're not actually changing the rules. There's a very strict Islamic rule. And that was a really long statement. My real point is, do you really think that this is going to be beneficial, or is it really just American propaganda that says we're going to be helping these people? Is there an ulterior motive, as there was in Afghanistan, which was our own security?
Yeah, very well said. Let me just say that I don't know what the group you mentioned is. I never heard of it before. It seems to me inconceivable that any woman in Afghanistan could not think the situation is better today than it was under the Taliban. It's just inconceivable. You look at schools are now open. Women can walk down the street. Women can have a job. You can listen to music. You can read a newspaper. You can watch a television show. You can listen to a radio. None of that was the case, except for religious propaganda during the time. You had 50% of your population, women not allowed to go to any